Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Admit it, you gotta be a little panicked about what's going on with Brock Purdy and his shoulder. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. I don't know how any 49er fan or anyone who had high hopes for the 49ers this season cannot feel a little something in their stomach about seeing Brock Purdy being day-to-day. Now, if you want to be out there and say, oh, you know, the 49ers will fly away, it's Kyle Shanahan, he can turn anyone into anything. Well, this has been a season that looks like it's uneven, I think, is the generous way to put it. Spiraling down the tubes could be the non-generous way to put it, or maybe too hyperbole. But Brock Purdy now being limited and day-to-day with a shoulder Perloff is a 49ers fan's worst nightmare.
Yes, amongst all the other injuries. I think Nick Bosa is the worst nightmare, but Brock Purdy's the second worst nightmare. Because when Bosa's not out there, they have no chance of winning. Here's the question. Is this all going to be an excuse for the Niners? Because we've seen this season from them in 2020 after they reached the Super Bowl, everybody got hurt. And nobody was killing Kyle Shanahan for that because he had Nick Mullins at quarterback.
Sure.
So can Kyle Shanahan and the front office say, you know what, we're going to chalk this year up to injuries and we'll be back next year?
I think they need more than that, to be honest. And I think what they need is to do the thing that can be kind of painful, and people on the outside might say, oh, your Super Bowl odds will go down, or this makes you a little wounded. They've got to have some turnover here and try to get a bit younger.
A little bit of a rebuild?
I think a mini one. And I guess that would probably be doing some things that are pretty painful, which might be saying goodbye to George Kittle, maybe saying goodbye to Debo, who they've basically tried to trade the last two seasons anyway, if you believe those rumors. But they're going to have to get a bit younger in some of these spots. And it's the inevitability of what every team goes through. Look at what the Chiefs have had to do. Mm. They've had to reinvent themselves at times. Buffalo is doing that now. This Ravens team, this is an offense-first Ravens team. This is not your older brother's Ravens, who were the defensive Ray Lewis Suggs Ravens. This is a different story. And I don't know why the 49ers would be immune to that. They're going to have to do something similar.
Yeah, which is, by the way, a major problem for the Ravens. They could use, by the way, Niners have redefined themselves. They used to be the, they went from the number one defense and a middling offense to the number one offense and a middling defense, just like the Ravens. The Niners put up tons of yards, and their defense has fallen year after year after year. But that's not, it's not good. They don't want it that way.
Can I ask you a bigger question about the 49ers that I'm not sure what the answer is? What's the identity of this team? Who are they? I knew what they were last year. Last year, I knew what they were. That was a Christian McCaffrey-focused offense and some explosives with Purdy to Ayuk, and then obviously George Kittle as well. I knew they wanted to run the ball. Yeah. I knew what McCaffrey was in short yardage, and obviously, you know, the defense was a question all season long, so you were not getting your identity on the defensive side no matter how good Bosa was. What's their identity now? Because I feel like I'm watching Purdy try to do a ton out there.
I totally agree. It's Purdy running around like a chicken with his head cut off, just trying desperately to make a play.
Okay, and here we are before week 11, and he's day-to-day because of the shoulder.
But I'll tell you one thing about it. I mean, they're actually number two in offense. I thought they were number one. They were number two in offense of the Ravens. Like, they move the ball. They are not scary on defense. Unless Nick Bosa gets the quarterback, it's nothing. They are just vulnerable to every single other position, including Fred Warner, whose numbers, according to every analytic, have fallen off the map. And their special teams cost them this season. I mean, they've lost at least three games to the special teams. So they're just not a well-rounded team. Kyle Shanahan does one thing well. He coaches the offense. There is nobody to help with all this other stuff.
Okay, so Kyle Shanahan, the offensive wizard, I'll agree with you. I think they're, you know, 28 teams would switch out their coach for Kyle Shanahan. I get that. But if you're looking at the red zone scoring percentage, okay, so that's not field goals. Now we're talking about touchdowns only in the red zone. They're 26th in the league.
That's not good. Also, too, they're in the red zone all the time, right? I mean, they probably have more red zone opportunities.
They're not scoring.
Yeah, no, they're not at all.
Right. So, okay, good for you. You're in the red zone, but you're not scoring. And your kicker is shaky, and you've actually gone through three different kickers this year because of injury.
But you think about this team, the Niners. Remember the first Super Bowl run. Like, they had killers. Last Sunday, Geno Smith has basically a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Nobody thought the Niners were going to be able to stop them. There's just, honestly, if you double-team Bosa, what is there on that team? Who do they have?
Well,
they
that's why I asked what the identity is.
That's the problem. They needed to get D'Amico Ryans or Robert Saleh back in the building. I think the problem is their defense is not good now.
Well, the other part, too, is they can't close out games, and that's been the big thing.
Yes.
And we talk about Shanahan and Super Bowls and big games. Okay, let's put that to the side. This is regular season games where they can't close out division opponents when they have a lead. And that's not the identity, because I don't want to get so down on the 49ers. It's not like they're a 2-win team. They're 5-5, so they're right in the middle of things. But I'm at a loss for what their identity is. And I think that the mistake, and I'm not saying don't pay him, pay Brock Purdy. He'll be your quarterback for the future. I'm all in favor of that. I just don't know if you build around Brock Purdy. Do you get what I'm saying? And it's not that he's not, I don't know if that, do you build around Purdy like the Chiefs build around Mahomes or something like that?
They're not going to.
I don't think that's possible.
They're not paying Brock Purdy $60 million. There's no way that's happening.
But he's the next guy up, so why wouldn't he get that
money? It's just not happening. Because Kyle Shanahan is way too, he just changes his mind at quarterback all the time.
So who's going to be the quarterback?
I think they'll get Purdy at a much more reasonable rate.
But every owner and every coach and GM wants to get their quarterback at a more reasonable rate. And does that ever happen?
Giants got Daniel Jones for 2 years.
Yeah, but Purdy is light years better than Jones.
Not this year. I mean,
Daniel Jones is fourth string. He can't even get on the practice field.
I think if the Niners do not make the playoffs, Purdy is not going to have a leg to stand on.
Okay, but the Dolphins probably didn't want to pay Tua. I can't imagine the Jaguars really wanted to pay Trevor Lawrence at the top of the market. No one wants to pay at the top of the market, but they all do.
Jerry Jones, Trevor Lawrence you're going to pay because he's Trevor Lawrence.
Jerry Jones probably didn't want to pay Dak Prescott at the top of the market. He got paid. They all get paid, so why would Brock Purdy be any different?
The market went crazy last offseason. I don't think it happens this year. I think, honestly, Shanahan is... Look at Shanahan's history at quarterback. He got to San Francisco, traded for Jimmy G, won at a high, high level, gave up on him multiple times, so fast. Drafted Trey Lance, even though Garoppolo was winning at a ridiculously high rate, said, let's bring in Trey Lance. Gave up on him almost immediately.
Yep.
Now he's got Brock Purdy in here, two major injuries in. You don't think he would give up on that guy, too? He has no loyalty at quarterback. He's the most fickle offensive coach in the entire league.
Yeah, but unless you give me who's going to replace Brock Purdy, I don't... Because here's the thing. Do you think C.J. Stroud's getting paid? Didn't we just watch Jordan Love get paid? These guys are still getting paid.
C.J. Stroud, yes. Of course he's getting paid.
So why wouldn't Brock Purdy get paid?
Because he's not as good as C.J. Stroud.
Come on. We're talking about a guy who finished in top three in MVP voting. I have a T-shirt in our office that was sent to us by a listener that says Brock Purdy for MVP.
32 GMs. Do you think one is taking Brock Purdy over C.J. Stroud?
But it doesn't matter because...
How does that not matter?
They all get paid because they all do. No one's taking Tua and he got paid. Everyone gets paid.
The Niners would not have paid Tua. I think a lot of teams would not have paid Tua. Tua works in Miami. It does not work on most teams.
I just don't know why you would think all of a sudden this is going to change when we have so much evidence to the contrary where every quarterback who comes up gets paid.
So
Jared Goff got paid. They all get paid.
Dak was 4 years at about $60 million. There's just no way the Niners are not going to look at it like that. I just don't...
It's going to be one of the $200 million contracts for Brock Purdy.
It's just going to be so much more reasonable than this Dak deal because, first of all, they have a lot of money. I think that they have a lot of leverage on him because he's coming off a disappointing season.
I think they have he has leverage on them. Who are you going to go to? Aaron Rodgers? Have fun.
They could go to Sam Darnold, Carson Wentz, Kirk Cousins. They have a lot. Aaron Rodgers. They're going to say, do you want to play hardball? We've always wanted Aaron Rodgers here. Let's bring him in.
So here's another thing about the 49ers. Anytime they've tried to play hardball with any one of their players, what happens? The player gets paid. Brandon Ayuk got paid. Trent Williams got paid.
Yeah, Trent Williams, you should pay.
Christian McCaffrey got a raise. George Kittle got paid. Debo held in. He got paid. They all get paid. Bosa held out. He got paid. They all get paid. Why would Purdy be any different than any of these guys?
Because Purdy is not Nick Bosa. He's not Trent Williams is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Nick Bosa is a first ballot Hall of Famer. George Kittle is a first ballot Hall of Famer. And also, Kittle is a tight end. They didn't have to pay him that much. McCaffrey is a first ballot Hall of Famer, and they didn't pay him that much either. $19 million?
They added on when they didn't even have
like
to.
Like $3 million. Like, yeah. We're talking about $60 million of cap space.
We're talking about the most important position on the field. And that's it. End of story. And I do think you're right that maybe Tua is the one exception, but he did ultimately get paid. And I also think that people would take Brock Purdy over Tua. I don't think you're right that that Purdy has no market.
No market. Like CJ Stroud, it was the number two overall pick in the NFL, for better or worse, cares about that kind of thing. Like, if you're a number one, two, or three pick, you're going to get chances through.
I know, but see, I thought that was the whole thing why people got mad at me. The Purdy party, the Purdy pack. All you guys got mad at me because I said it was the system around and it was the pieces around Brock Purdy. And I was told, no, 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 Maggie, you're wrong. He's great and he belongs in the MVP conversation. So now when it's time to get paid, why would it be any different?
Well, it's
now it's going to be he was Mr. Irrelevant. I thought we got past that.
He's totally a system quarterback in the sense that, like, you're paying Kyle Shanahan probably as much as any coach in the league. Because you know Kyle Shanahan can do it with anybody. You just can't pay him these crazy, crazy quarterback contracts because you'd gum up the works really badly. And come on, you don't think Brock Purdy's going to take a little less?
Why?
Because he's Mr. Irrelevant. He
not
knows
anymore. He's Mr. MVP top three now.
He's definitely not Mr. MVP. No one's like, hey, here comes Mr. MVP. It's Brock Purdy. And he was fourth, by the way. It wasn't even first on his team in MVP voting.
So here's the thing then. Well, then why are we even talking about a contract extension after this year? Technically, they don't have to do that.
They might not. I mean, I'm not talking about it. I mean, listen, like, is he going to do like Kyler Murray and have his agent write a strong letter to the owner?
gets leaked immediately.
Well, okay. The issue with him is he was not a first-round pick, so he has one less year on his deal. I agree with you. Like, they don't have a choice but to fill in some of these older guys. Like, Kittle is holding on by a thread. He's the heart and soul of this team. Debo is done. That's not. In fact, I don't even know why the Debo Samuel I've seen. Like, I don't even know why he's on the field. Juwan Jennings is clearly their number one wide receiver right now. It's not even. There's not even a competition for him. So if you cover that guy, I just don't know what the Niners have. It's all going to be Kyle Shanahan's going to tell the owner injuries. What do you expect me to do? McCaffrey wasn't here. He just was not on the field. We watched the Niners. Did you see McCaffrey out there for 85% of the season?
No, I'm going back to the Purdy thing. I can't imagine a quarterback outside of like Trent Dilfer, who really got no respect as a quarterback playing for the Ravens, who your team would go to the NFC Championship game. You get hurt in that game, so it's a wash. But then you go to the Super Bowl, and your team's not going to pay you to stick around. I just don't see what world that actually makes any kind of sense. Purdy's up. He's next. He's going to get paid next.
James Garoppolo. What's the difference?
By the way, did get a contract extension. So it might not have been top of the market, but he did get paid by the 49ers.
We got a huge deal when he got there. Did he get another? He might have got another second deal, but they gave up pretty big on him really fast.
I mean, but that's because they also drafted a quarterback in the top three. I don't know if the 49ers would do something like that. They had to trade up two times to get up to number three to get Trey Lance.
Right, because they had given up on Jimmy G.
No, but like they thought they were replacing Jimmy G with their quarterback of the future for the next decade. That's not what you're talking about. You're talking about not paying Purdy, but you're not saying draft a quarterback.
Well, the only reason they moved up is they totally lost faith in Garoppolo because he would overthrow guys by 2 feet.
And you ever notice
when Garoppolo was out there, every wide receiver had to put his hands up because Garoppolo throws high all the time. Anyway, I just think Shanahan's pretty fickle. I think there's a lot TBD here. And I like Purdy too, by the way. I think he's more impressive physically. Like, the guy moves like crazy, but this is not what they want. They don't want him scrambling for 12 seconds on every play. And if they don't make the playoffs, I totally agree with your original point. There's going to be a reckoning here. They have to decide, how do we get younger?
Shireen Williams is a writer for Pro Football Talk. She is a Hall of Fame voter. She's an award winner. She's got the goods, as they would say. I'm curious to get her thoughts on Purdy. Obviously, she covered the Dallas Cowboys for a long, long time and still does. She's going to join us next. You can still weigh in, by the way, on our side question today, which is not sports. What is the movie that you saw way too early, way too young? Maybe scared the bejesus out of you. Everyone remembers this one. 855-212-4227. We've got NFL questions that we need answered. So we're going to one of the best. Shireen Williams, who is, I've been an admirer of from afar, Shireen, for many, many years. Bill Nunn Award 2018, Hall of Fame voter, 30 seasons covering the NFL for Pro Football Talk Now. Shireen, it's Maggie Gray, it's Andrew Perloff. I'll first start off with a thank you. If you had ever mailed it in one moment of your career, I'm likely not sitting here. So thank you so much for that. Not to, you know, make it so personal, but thank you is my first thing. Second, how are you doing this morning?
I'm great. And thank you for that introduction. It is a pleasure to join you guys today. So thanks for having me on.
I have none of that sentiment. I'm an Eagles fan. So all things Dallas, I look at it sort of skeptically. Yeah.
Well, we need someone who speaks fluent Jerry as well, Shireen. And I think you're the Rosetta Stone here for Jerry Jones. And we'll talk about the Cowboys. You know, first off, you know, before Dak Prescott got hurt, okay, the team was bad. They weren't winning. What was the number one reason you think they were the reason why they were struggling this year? And I'm talking about before their starting quarterback went down.
Yeah. And I understand that, you know, it's the off season of not doing anything, not improving that roster. And you let depth guys walk away. You look at Washington and the players that Dan Quinn took with him from the Cowboys to Washington, you know, the Dorrance Armstrong types and those types of really depth guys on that defense. But it wasn't just the defense, it was the offense too, where they let guys walk away. Now Tony Pollard walks away, you let him go to Tennessee in free agency. You don't sign another running back. So you got a guy, an undrafted free agent, who's your starting running back. And by the way, Rico Dowdle didn't start the season as your running back because you brought Ezekiel Elliott back, who it was obvious had nothing left in the tank last year in New England. You didn't bring in another receiver. You got no receivers. And Brandon Cooks gets hurt, who's your supposed number two, who's probably better as a number three or number four receiver now where he is in his career. So you got no other weapons on that offense. The offensive line is not what it used to be. So all those things that I think added together, but yet the blame goes right back to Jerry Jones on not doing anything in the offseason to improve this roster with free agency. You can't just go in the draft and make your team better. It's the core. You've got to use the draft, obviously, but you've also got to supplement that with free agents. And they didn't. Eric Kendricks, I mean, he was out there as long as he was for a reason, and he's the best free agent they brought in this year. So I think it, Maggie, it all goes back to that offseason when they did absolutely nothing and thought, well, we won 12 games last year. We've got to re-sign Dak. We've got to re-sign Michael Parsons. We got to re-sign CeeDee Lamb. So we're not going to spend any money this year because we got to re-sign those three guys. So are they going to spend money this offseason? That's my question. If they don't, this is going to be a really, really, really long, long rebuild for this team.
It's funny because there's this narrative now that, oh, they were holding their cap space for next year. I know a lot of that has to go to Micah Parsons. That's a great question. So are they actually going to be all in next year, get a receiver, get a running back? Or will Jerry sort of do the opposite because he's gotten so much criticism, or is he going to stick to his guns?
Yeah, Andrew, it's a great question, and I think it's the million-dollar question. And this season's lost. I mean, they're done. They're not going anywhere. They're not going to the postseason. They're going to move on from the coaching staff. And if I'm a coach that Mike Vrabel or whoever they're interested in this offseason, I'm asking, that's my first question, like, what are we doing to rebuild this team? You've got some really great core parts. I mean, CeeDee Lamb's one of the best receivers in the NFL. Dak Prescott was number two in MVP voting to Lamar Jackson last year. He's a good quarterback in this league, one of the top quarterbacks in this league. Michael Parsons is one of the top edge rushers in this league. Yes, he's been hurt a lot of this year, but he's still one of the best edge rushers. Trevon Diggs, he hasn't played very well this year, but I think you still list him among the top cornerbacks. So what are we doing to improve the rest of the roster? Are we going out and spending money in free agency? And don't tell me you can't, because we all know you can. Or are you just going to try to rebuild this over some drafts? And if you're going to do that, it's going to take multiple drafts. You're not doing that in one draft. So, Andrew, I think that's the biggest question going into the offseason for the Cowboys is, are you going to spend money in free agency? Are you going to go out and help improve this roster? Get you a second receiver, get you a running back who can actually play, you know, help the other the defensive tackle position has not been improved. They've tried, but it hasn't been improved over the last X number of years. You can try to improve at defensive tackle. So all those questions need to be asked by whoever is interviewing for this job to replace Mike McCarthy in the offseason.
Shereen Williams is joining us, 30 seasons covering the NFL, now for Pro Football Talk, does a fantastic job and covered the Cowboys for a long time, still covers the Cowboys. And so we're starting there, Shereen, but, you know, you've heard it. You covered him when he was a Cowboy. The Deion Sanders dots that are being connected here. Now, Deion has said over and over again he doesn't want to coach in the NFL, but no one believes it because the relationship between him and Jerry runs so deep. What's your thought and your stance on Deion Sanders being a part of the future of the Cowboys?
I think there's 10% or less chance that it happens. Deion would overshadow Jerry, which he's not going to have. I think if Deion goes to the NFL, I think he would want to go with his son. Well, the Cowboys, everybody's like, well, you know, I saw Michael Irvin say it. He would bring Shador with him. Like Shador would say, I'm not going any place with the Cowboys. That's great if they hadn't signed Dak Prescott and made him the priciest, most expensive, highest paid player in NFL history right before the season started at $60 million a year. So you're going to have Shador set behind Dak. Like, how's that going to work for the next 4 years? So are you going to play Shador and just sit Dak? Like, that makes no sense to me, and I think he would want his son. Now, if you hadn't re-signed Dak, I think it would be more plausible that would be the case, because that would get him a young quarterback on a young on an inexpensive contract, a rookie contract. I think all those things would have worked better for the Cowboys, and they could have rebuilt, frankly, pretty quickly. If you think Shador can play, like the rebuild would have been far quicker because they would have had the $60 million a year you spent on Dak. Now, he has a no-trade clause, so you're not trading him, and the cap hit on that is prohibitive. So that's not happening. So all of that, I think, adds up to say, if they offered Deion the job, would he take it? Probably. His house is right by the Cowboys training facility. I mean, close. He still lives there. He still has his house. So I think he would take the job if Jerry offered it. So forget what he says there. I just don't think Jerry's going to offer it. And they're certainly not going to draft Shador to be their quarterback when they've paid Dak Prescott all this money. So I give it a 10% or less chance of happening.
All right. Give us the percentage for Bill Belichick as the next Cowboys coach.
Again, I don't think that one's going to happen. Here's the reasons why. Jerry is cheap. He's not going to pay Bill Belichick what Bill Belichick should be paid. I don't think Jerry's going to pay a coach more than $5 million a year, maybe six, but it's going to be far under $10 million. Well, Belichick's worth, what, $20, $25 million a year probably is what he wants. Would he coach the Cowboys for $5 or $6 million? I don't know about that. Number two, Belichick is not going to like all the tours coming through the building, Jerry Jones doing radio twice a week, all those. Jerry's not giving up any of that. Three, I think Belichick, again, like Deion, would become the face of the franchise, and Jerry's not going to want that. He is the face of the franchise, period, end of story. He's the face of the franchise. So I think it's going to be somebody who's not going to take the spotlight away from Jerry, where he's still the main guy, the face of the franchise. And by the way, Jerry's not giving up personnel. He's owner/GM. He's not going to give that up. Well, Belichick, any place he goes is going to want some control of personnel. He won't have that in Dallas. I mean, just look at what the Cowboys did signing Ezekiel Elliott. Mike McCarthy didn't want Ezekiel Elliott. And yet here he is, brought to the Cowboys, and it took a while before they could even sit him down and not have him as their starting running back. So all those things take place in Dallas, and you have to know that going in. And if you're not prepared for that and don't want that, you don't go to the Cowboys. Will they interview him? I think there's probably a chance they do interview him, but I don't think they hire him. So then you're going to ask me, Andrew, well, who are they going to hire? Again, that's a big, I think they'll have interest in Mike Vrabel. I think if a coach like Kevin Stefanski, I do think it'll be somebody who's been a head coach before. I do think that guy. I think Jerry likes the veteran coaches. I think he would probably interview Kellen Moore just because he knows Kellen Moore and likes Kellen Moore. You know, maybe he interviews Cliff Kingsbury because he's been a head coach before. Maybe that's a possibility. But you look at it, it was a year too late on Sean Payton. You weren't going to fire Bill Parcells to get Sean Payton, but, you know, Sean leaves to go to New Orleans, and then Bill only coaches one more year. So they were a year late on Sean Payton, and now they're going to be a year late on Dan Quinn, when he could have had Dan Quinn. He could have fired Mike McCarthy in the offseason and had Dan Quinn, and he didn't do that. So, yeah, it's going to be a huge question of who they get. And I think we go back to the big question that if a coach has other opportunities to go elsewhere, is he going to want to come here with all those things in play? And the biggest thing being, are you going to spend money in the offseason to upgrade this roster?
Shireen Williams is one of the most distinguished journalists covering the NFL 30 seasons. She's doing it now for Pro Football Talk and doing a great job. All right, enough Cowboys, although we could do that all day. Perloff and I have a big disagreement going, and maybe you can settle it for us, about the future of Brock Purdy in San Francisco. To me, I think he's just the next guy up, Shireen, and he's going to get the big contract now because this is how it goes with quarterbacks. And Perloff is not so sure because, well, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Perloff, but...
Yeah, I think that after all these big contracts went south this offseason and the way the Niners are built, that Kyle Shanahan's pretty fickle. I don't think he's giving him Dak Prescott $60 million a year kind of contract for Brock Purdy.
Okay, let me throw this out there to you guys. Looks like Aaron Rodgers isn't going back to the Jets, right? We all think new coach, new GM. They're not going to want Aaron Rodgers. Would Kyle Shanahan have interest in Aaron Rodgers, thinking he can win with that roster? He had interest in Kirk Cousins, and could that be a possibility for them? Or maybe the Vikings, what are the, you know, the Vikings move on from Sam, would they be interested in trading Sam Darnold to the 49ers? But would they have any interest at all in Aaron? Now, I think, personally, I think Aaron Rodgers is done. I think he's finished. I think we see that this year, that there's, I mean, that roster is really good. Like, there's no reason that they shouldn't be producing on offense. There's zero reason with all the weapons that they have. So if it's me, I say no, but would Kyle Shanahan, if he's still there, I think that's a question too. If he's still there, would he have interest in Aaron Rodgers?
Wait, well, you think Kyle Shanahan might be in his last year, and possibly in his last year here?
It's been thrown out there. I think Kyle Shanahan's a great coach. And when you change coaches, you have to make sure that you're upgrading. It's same at quarterback. If you're changing a coach, changing a quarterback, you have to be sure that what you're changing to is better than what you had. Is San Francisco going to find a better coach than Kyle Shanahan? I don't know about that. Like, I'm not moving on from Kyle Shanahan. I think he's a top 10 coach in this league. I think you can win with Kyle Shanahan. I think they've shown they can win with – no, they haven't won a Super Bowl yet. I get that, and I get that's what they're aspiring to. But he's still one of the best coaches in the NFL, and I don't know that there's many coaches that you can upgrade to who's going to be better than Kyle Shanahan. But what if they don't make the playoffs? What if they finish with 6 or 7 wins? Do the 49ers consider that? I mean, they move on from Jim Harbaugh, for Pete's sake. So who knows what happens in this league? I mean, nothing surprises you anymore in this league with things like that happen. But would I do it? Absolutely not. But would the 49ers do it? I don't know that. Maybe. I don't know.
Shireen Williams, you've just given us a lot to think about here. Shireen, thank you so much for the time. Again, huge fans of yours, and continued success. And hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you guys for having me.
Appreciate that. What do you think?
Wow. I mean, it's interesting. Kyle Shanahan, that'd be a good hire for the Cowboys.
Think they could get him? Well, would he overshadow Jerry?
You know, another guy, she mentioned Kevin Stefanski, who EJ has been saying would be a great fit, their current Cleveland Browns coach. And what if Zach Taylor got fired in Cincinnati? That's another guy who's put up gigantic offensive numbers. I think all these teams need to hire offensive coaches. Like, I would not hire Vrabel there. I think Vrabel would be a good hire, but you need to get something going there offensively. Because you have a lot of pieces on defense. I think a lot of guys could coach that defense. I would.
I thought Mike Zimmer was going to coach it a little bit better, but to Shireen's point, they didn't really add a lot of depth.
Nobody thought Mike Zimmer was going to coach that better. That was an obvious downgrade.
Well, but Mike Zimmer had a reputation of being able to stop the run. Anyway, that's not the point. Yeah. The point is, I would rather have Mike Vrabel, though, than Cliff Kingsbury.
It depends which team
Kellen
you are.
Moore.
Do you have a young quarterback who you need to develop?
No, they have Dak Prescott.
Yeah, like I don't need to see the 2021 Tennessee Titans in my like. I don't want a quarterback throwing 17 touchdowns. So if you had like Caleb Williams in Chicago, I do not. I would not hire Vrabel. Right? Like, do you agree with that?
No, because I think that Chicago needs more than just like a skilled play caller.
I want a Sean McVay. I want a Kyle Shanahan. These are the guys. I want a Zach Taylor. I want these offensive geniuses. I want Kevin O'Connell.
I'm going to be honest. I don't think Mike McCarthy's a bad play caller. There are times where McCarthy can be a head-scratching head coach in terms of timeouts and other things like that. But as far as play calling, I don't think he's a bad play caller at all.
But if you really want to go for the gold, you got to take a risk on a Sean McVay. Like, you got to find like the next level guy. McCarthy's fine, Vrabel's fine. But if you really want to build a team, like I think McVay is the model or Shanahan's the model.
Andrew Bogish is here with us. Headlines abound on this Thursday. What's up?
And they're all sponsored by Mint Mobile. Switch and get half off unlimited premium wireless at mintmobile.com/score. It might not be on all of our TVs tonight, but plenty of people will watch Steelers-Browns on Thursday Night Football. Mike Tomlin's team trying to stay hot against a second division opponent in 5 days. Less time, but full prep for his Steelers.
We don't default to base menus and things of that nature, particularly when you're playing someone that is familiar with you as Cleveland is with us. It is worth the trouble to ponder what's appropriate to run and what's not.
Ponder away.
Sometimes, like, Coach Tomlin, like, he loses me. Does it lose anyone else? Or are you with him every step of the way when he's talking in these type of coded words?
No one's ever understood Mike Tomlin. Okay. Yeah, no, that's intentional. He's talking gobbledygook. I thought that was, everyone knows that. You ever heard Gio, CBS Sports Network, Boomer and Gio?
Yeah.
He does the best Tomlin thing because he can follow the nonsensical sense.
It's just like, I don't know.
You know who's good at that too? Andy Reid. He puts out a lot of words that don't mean a single thing at all.
The word salad?
The better the coach, the more he can say without actually saying anything. And Tomlin's a king at that.
Tomlin facing a Browns team that's already upset the Ravens this season. And Mother Nature might be an issue in Cleveland tonight. Temps in the 30s, wind, some rain, maybe some snow, all in the forecast. Gino Auriemma is now the winningest coach in NCAA basketball history. All divisions, men and women, don't matter. Last night's 85-41 rout of FDU, victory number 1,217, breaking Auriemma's tie with former Stanford coach Tara Vanderveer. Diana Taurasi, one of the 60-plus former players who played their own way to be in attendance.
You told me all the things I needed to hear to make me a better person, a better teammate, a better basketball player.
This UConn program had one winning season before Auriemma took over in 1985. There was a time when the Clippers could not win in their new building. Now they don't lose there.
Does James want this dance? With six to shoot, crosses over, steps back with four, a straightaway three, swirls in! Harden from downtown, and the Clippers take a 97-79 lead.
As heard on Clippers radio, James Harden 24 in a 104-93 decision over the Magic. The Clips have won six in a row at home. Tigers lefty Tarik Skubal, Braves lefty Chris Sale, this season's Cy Young Award winners. Skubal, the unanimous pick in the AL. MVPs handed out tonight. And I'm not sure which agency this would fall under, but I demand an investigation. A crypto entrepreneur just paid $6.2 million for a piece of art, a piece of conceptual art, a banana duct taped to a blank wall. It's called Comedian. This piece of art first debuted at Art Basel in Miami in 2019, caused such a stir then, including someone taking the banana off the wall and eating it, that they removed the piece. But now, bidding began at 800 grand, ended at 6.2 mil, and what Justin's son actually paid that for is a certificate giving him the authority to tape a banana to a wall and call it Comedian.
This is my favorite thing ever. I think this is the most important work of art in 50 years.
I love this.
I stared at this picture of this banana taped to the wall for a good half hour yesterday. It's brilliant.
What did you find in that banana?
It's just like, it is such a deconstruction of art. Like, it's just so next level and brilliant. I just love it. And the fact that the owner has to replace a banana on a regular basis, I just like think, I don't know. It just like strikes a nerve with me. I think it's awesome.
I mean, this might be just a little over my head. This is when I look at the art world and I'm like, oh, you guys are all full of bleep. This is all right, one big wink and a nod, and you're like getting over on the public.
I think it's sort of, that's embedded in the message of the art too. Like, it's sort of a wink and a nod to how ridiculous this whole thing is. There's just something cool about it. I don't know what it is.
I got to look it up. I haven't seen it. So you have to keep replacing the banana?
Yeah, that's the thing. The right. owner has to replace a banana.
I think that's where my issue lies in all of this. Like, if I was rich, I'd probably have art. It seems like the thing you're supposed to do. So, like, if you want to tell me that you just spent $6 million on... like a Picasso that we just found somewhere, I get it.
Right.
This guy paid $6 million to be the guy that can tape a banana to a wall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to be fair, no one else thought it up, so I guess that there's that. But I thought that art is supposed to move you in a certain way. What does a banana duct tape to a wall do?
Well, actually, I mean, like Picasso or Mona Lisa, like you look at those paintings, like art is important because of the meaning. As far as like, there's nothing like, a lot of people look at a Picasso and be like, what the heck am I looking at?
Right.
Like 98% of people.
It's not science.
Yeah, yeah. Like there's no emotional reaction to a cubist painting. It's just like sort of deconstructionism and it's smart. If you walked into a house with all this rich art and there was a Monet and a Picasso and a Van Gogh, the first thing you're going to see is that banana taped to the wall.
Right, but
so it's a conversation piece.
It's not just a conversation, it's the conversation piece. So, but it's also just like, because it just sort of makes a commentary on the entire art world. It's kind of brilliant.
But what's the conversation beyond, so how often you change that banana?
And you paid $6 million.
I don't know. There's just something visually striking about it, too. I love it.
By the way, this is going to be in some rich person's house. And you know what? It's going to probably be some maid or something who's changing the banana. It's not even going to be the dude.
I mean, what if they're out of town and the banana goes brown and mushes into the wall?
Then you get fruit flies. This thing's stupid.
But let me ask you a question. You guys have seen Mona Lisa, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, what's so special about that? There's nothing uniquely special. It's just a portrait.
There's supposed to be some mystery. What's the smile about? The curvature in her lips? What does she know that you don't know? Her eyes follow you all over the room. It was painted in the 1500s.
Right, like, right.
There's
right,
certain things I can understand about
one of many paintings that look exactly like that. There's just like the art becomes, it evolves beyond what the actual work is, and it's becomes like a thing unto itself. It also, I don't know, it's just the simplicity of it. I like it.
I know I did not elbow 500 French people at the Louvre to get a close look at the Mona Lisa for you to say, what's the big deal about the Mona Lisa?
EJ was just there.
But I mean, as a painting, it's not, the big deal about the Mona Lisa is not like it's the best painting of all time. There's just much more going on. Like if you read the history of the Mona Lisa, it could easily have been discarded as any other work. Like if you had 50 paintings up on the wall, you might not pick that one. It's just
right.
So a portrait.
Right. Its value now is because it's the Mona Lisa. It's like
It's become a thing.
Right.
Just like the banana on the wall has become a
it's
thing.
It's not just like the banana.
Well, I can tell you, Pierre and Jean Paul online, the Mona Lisa thought it was real important.
I mean, I get like the Sistine Chapel, like that stands out. And even I get like the Impressionist paintings, but a lot of paintings that are super, I can't be the only one who thinks this, that are super expensive and fancy. Like a lot of people look at them and be like, I don't get it. Like, I don't get the big deal.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I think it just paying $6 million to have authority over a joke about paying millions of dollars for art.
It's a little meta.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so meta. I love every second
of
it.
It's too meta.
Can we just go to your apartment and just tape stuff to the wall? We can do
this.
No,
because like we have white walls and the tape will...
Need painter's tape.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, do you guys have to buy that stuff that cleans white walls?
Mm-hmm. All the time. I've got a 5-year-old kid.
Yeah, yeah. So no, I don't really need a banana on the wall.
Hmm.
Plus, I
want to admire someone else's banana.
Yeah.
The greatest, came out wrong.
Greatest album cover of all time is Andy Warhol's Velvet Underground banana cover. You guys know that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just something cool about it. You guys didn't see this and be like, oh, that's kind of interesting.
No, I saw the headline of $6.2 million. He got angry. Then I read that he actually just gets a certificate. He got angrier. And here we are.
Here we are. Bogus is pissed off.
Well, you guys, remember when about 4 years ago, crypto art or like whatever. What were
NFTs.
Those called?
NFTs.
NFTs. Yeah.
You bought one.
I bought one. I don't know if I still have that. What was it?
Frolov bought one of Bryce Young.
Yeah, it was
wearing
beautiful.
A jacket that's got flowers on it. You don't even know where it is because I don't think there's anything to have.
I think he had a.
There's no there.
I think he had a wreath around his head too, right? I don't know what happened
makes,
to it.
Your banana take makes a little more sense now at this. Bryce, what you think?
I think
is
it was
art.
Something where I tried to pay with Amex and they only took Visa, and I don't know if I ever got that NFT. But that thing is paying for my kids' college.
Definitely.
Oh, sure.
Definitely.
Sure. Okay, lots more to do, including a coaching candidate that really came out of the blue yesterday. We'll tell you about that next.
The Dependable Player of the Week is sponsored by Depend and the Prostate Cancer Foundation, reminding you that health is a long game and screening for prostate cancer easier than ever. Learn more at Depend.com. All right, Dependable Player of the Week.
All right, I think I have an idea.
You got it?
Yeah.
I remember EJ has tends to do Dependable Player of last night often.
No. I'm going to go. I think you went to women's hoops. I mentioned before, South Carolina has now won 43 games in a row. They haven't lost since they lost to Iowa in the Final Four in 2023. Problem is it feels like it's kind of a newish team. There's some turnover from last year's team. So would he go with Dependable? They're 5-0. Do you get what the tree I'm barking up here, Pearl? Maybe Paige Beckers? Maybe he just goes with UConn with Gino Auriemma breaking the record last night?
Was it AZ Fudd, the big breakout? I'll go Jared Goff. How about that?
That was close to there.
Both it's football?
Yeah, we're going football because okay. Perloff complained about Dyson Daniels, defensive player of the week.
Yeah,
so.
Alex is defensive player of the year. That's
the decade,
Alex from
I
the
thought.
Backs. First
All
call
decade.
Ever on the show. He's like, Dyson Daniels is going to be defensive player of the year. That's not happening. Go ahead, EJ.
Anyway, the Dependable Player of the Week this week is Carson Beck, who threw for 347 yards in a gotta-have-it game for the Georgia Bulldogs. Beck's been much maligned. He hasn't been quite dependable, quite frankly, for most of this year. But in what was the biggest game of the season, he was throwing ropes all around the field. A big game against a great defense, so I'm giving Carson Beck Dependable Player of the Week. They came back from down 10-0 the first quarter to win 31-17. Go Dogs.
Well, they cover the 42 against UMass this weekend, but the Georgia situation is fascinating one to watch, right? Because Beck played a lot better, and if somehow he got whatever was between the ears or something, the lack of confidence or whatever that was plaguing him earlier in the season, don't they have to now be thought of as the favorite to be the national title champion?
I think they're, what is it, Ohio State 1, Georgia 2?
No,
and the
Oregon 2.
No, oh, the odds?
It was Ohio. I thought it was Ohio State, Oregon, and then Georgia, I thought, was 3.
Oh, they're 3. Okay. Well, they were forever, they were sticky at number 2. Yeah, I mean, why not Alabama, though?
Why not Alabama?
Because I just think Alabama, if Jalen Milroe is going to run for 200 yards, they could be right. It just feels, it's so hard. It's so hard to tell. I do think that the one caveat you've been talking about this morning, I'm going to steal it from you, the cold weather games in the first round, maybe that guts them. I just can't see Penn State, who can't be top 10 teams, knocking off of Georgia and Alabama, and they all seem like they're destined to play in the first round. So
honestly, the Beck thing is the Beck situation and what's going on with Ohio State's offensive line are the two most interesting things to me. Two of the most interesting things to me right now. Ole Miss and Florida playing a very interesting game this weekend in the Swamp as well. Quickly, Adrian is in Maryland. Adrian, we were talking about Brock Purdy and whether or not it's a given that he gets the next big quarterback contract for the 49ers. What do you got?
I don't think it's a given that he's going to get that big contract. I think he's going to get that Daniel Jones contract, about $40 million a year. Shanahan, he's finicky. You know? He did it with Jimmy G. You know, he went out and got Trey Lance. So he's not afraid to just, you know, plug somebody in and let him play. Just like you said last year, Maggie, you said Brock Purdy's not that it guy. He's not going to change the game for you. He's the type of guy that's going to, you're going to put him in the system, and he's going to run that system for you.
Same amount of Pro Bowls as Justin Herbert.
Right, right. And Pro Bowls don't mean anything these days, right? All they do is play flag football.
I'm just saying, though, he's had a season that would put him in the top of quarterbacks in terms of production. And I was called a hater last year because I said that Brock Purdy, I didn't think he was an MVP candidate. I thought it was more McCaffrey.
And McCaffrey ended up being higher voted.
But it's not like Brock fell out of the running. He was right there. They're within an eyelash of winning the Super Bowl. And now all of a sudden people want to bring up Mr. Irrelevant. Now all of a sudden he's not, you know, actually the secret sauce for the 49ers. I think you guys are being disingenuous. Adrian, thank you so much.
Yeah, I just don't think. I think Daniel Jones is a good model.
He's so much better than Daniel Jones, guys.
Well, the point being like some kind of cost-controlled contract. I mean, maybe you're right. They have paid everyone, but that's a lot.
Okay, lots more to do, including someone on the hot seat.